Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Steve Jordahl. Fred Jackson was with us last hour from AFR News, and Steve has come over to be with us as he normally is, Monday through Thursday this half hour. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Tim. Hey, Ed. How you doing?
Hey, good, Steve. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. So did you guys see this story? A 102-year-old great-grandmother becomes oldest skydiver.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
I did.
You didn't see this, Ed?
I did not.
Would you skydive? Have you ever?
I've never skydived.
I haven't either, but I would love to.
I don't think I would like it. I'm not like afraid of heights. I'll get up on a ladder and do stuff on the roof, or whatever
in the plane.
You know, fly on a plane, but the idea of jumping out of an airplane, perfectly good airplane. You know,
perfectly good airplane.
It just doesn't strike me as something that would. I wouldn't find it fun. I don't get it.
I'm in your camp. Yeah. In fact, I would be terrorized if the very thought of it, having to do something, jump out of a plane.
Yeah.
But now Steve over here, no, he's a thrill a minute.
Yeah, that's right.
Thrill a minute.
Laugh a minute. Thrill a minute.
So before you get to be 102,
I would do it. Yeah.
George H.W. Bush did that. When he was like 90.
And Barbara too.
Didn't he do it like every year on his birthday?
Something like that. I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, 102-year-old lady jumps out of an airplane. I don't know where, I don't know, some age probably you consider, what have I got to lose? You know what I'm saying? So what if it doesn't open? I'm probably going to die the next 3 years anyway. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's funny in a dark way, but that's funny. What have I got
am
to,
I
okay.
The, am I the only one thinking that like this? I don't know. Maybe so.
You just put things in a funny way sometimes.
What have
I got to lose?
There's a picture of her.
I see it now. I'm on.
Irene O'Shea.
Irene O'Shea.
She is smiling too, or either the wind's blowing her cheeks back so bad. anyway.
That's a scream.
Congratulations to Irene O'Shea. I don't know where she's from. Do you know where she's from? She is from, I'm getting this off Google, Australia, I think this is. She's from Australia.
Well, it is being reported by a Sydney newspaper, or at least the AFP, their Sydney
desk. I think it's Australia, probably Australia, because it's warmer down there now.
Yeah.
I mean, the skydiver with her has a short sleeve shirt on. That's nowhere in the U.S. unless it's
right.
Arizona, SoCal, or Florida right now. All right, Steve, what do you got for us?
All right. Why don't we talk about what's going on in France, the town of Strasbourg, which is right on the French-German border. I've been there. It's a beautiful town. It has a great cathedral. I have a watercolor painting of this up in my house. They had a gunman, a 29-year-old gunman, whose name was Cherif Chekat. And he went into a Christmas market in the town of Strasbourg and started opening fire. He killed three and at least 12, I think, as the latest number, are wounded. As he was firing, the reports say that he was shouting Allah Akbar, and the French government is treating this as a terror attack.
That's Arabic for what?
For great.
God is great.
God is great.
But that's the saying that jihadists shout before they murder people, because they are, in their minds, they are honoring Allah by killing non-Muslims, right?
Right.
And so they're scoring points with Allah, so that's why they're giving him praise,
right,
as they commit these acts of terror.
I've seen videos of that region, like of these people in firefights when they don't intend to give up their life or whatever, but it's a common phrase over there. I've heard it. It's almost reflexive.
What is?
When they say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. They just say it all the time. It could be a cry of astonishment when you see something, you know, happen.
Right.
Or I mean, it's a commonly used phrase.
Is it like a Christian might say, praise the Lord?
If you sometimes say praise the Lord, and it's a little bit blasphemic in that you don't really mean praise the Lord, you're just kind of throwing it out there.
But I've described accurately the reason that these terrorists, or jihadists, I like to call them, shout this is because the reason they're doing what they're doing is to honor Allah, to please Allah, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and this I always want to say gentleman. He's not a gentleman, obviously. This guy, this murderer, had 27 prior criminal convictions.
Yeah, he was known. He was on their radar.
How can you have 27 prior convictions and not be in jail somewhere?
Yeah, you wonder, don't you?
And his like earliest convictions for violent robbery, even the earliest he committed when he was only 10 years old.
Yeah.
This is a bad dude.
Well,
evil.
And you know, they've got a problem now in Europe. It's well documented. Basically all over Europe. You've got a problem because you've got millions and millions of Muslims now come into these Western countries in Europe, and oftentimes they are in they live in their own neighborhoods, the no-go zones. You've heard about those things.
Right.
So oftentimes it's hard for cops to track or police to keep up with people who are potential terrorists. But in the case of this guy, he had a long record. But, you know, most of the Muslims that have come to Europe, I'm sure, are peaceful people. I'm not suggesting that the majority of them by any means are, you know, these kind of folks.
Right.
However, there is a strain of teaching inside Islam that is subscribed to by 20-30% or 40% of them. They don't necessarily all act out on it, but they believe in Islamic superiority. And just like people would say somebody is a white supremacist, for example,
right.
And they believe, you know, in that whites are superior by nature.
Right.
These people would believe Islam is superior by religion. And so therefore, they're going to impose their Islamist views. And that's subscribed to by a substantial minority. I guess some people would say it's a majority. Minority would...
Islam clearly teaches, I mean, just like Christianity teaches that it is true, Islam teaches that it is the true faith. Muhammad is the true prophet of God.
Right.
So if you're actually a Muslim, you believe that. You believe that all the world must submit to Allah. And now the percentage I've heard is that 10% of Muslims around the world are jihadists. They are willing to go to war, quote unquote, and kill infidels to impose Islam on the nation in which they live.
Because they believe this is the mission that the Quran teaches.
Right. So 10% of the whatever it is, 1.something billion people, that's
right.
A lot of, that's 100.
That's what I'm saying.
50 million people.
If you've got millions of people pouring in, millions of Muslims pouring into these Western European countries, and 10% of them subscribe to this view of Islam that you just stated
right.
out, that's unnerving. Well, that's when we see what happens. I mean, it's every week.
Well, I think in France,
every week in Europe, we see
one of the numbers I've heard. It may be inexact, these counts, but they said there are 5 million Muslims in France.
Right.
If 10% of them are jihadists, that's 500,000, right? You got my numbers right?
Right.
500,000. That's a lot of people willing to kill.
Right.
If those numbers hold up.
Some.
This guy get away, by the way?
What's that? Yeah, well, no, they haven't found him yet. He took a taxi.
Right.
He took a taxi away
from
the... Bragged
that he had killed at least
three
people.
Well, he was bleeding in the cab.
Did he kill with a gun?
Yes.
Well, don't they have gun laws to stop this in France?
They do, but somehow he got through the gun laws.
Oh.
This is... Let me just...
That was tongue-in-cheek.
Well, yeah.
I'm assuming that...
Yeah.
Because that's what they say over here.
You read me well.
Yes.
So this guy was born in Strasbourg, so he was not an immigrant. He was not even a Muslim until he went to prison. He was radicalized when he went to prison. In prison. And so that's where he got these Muslim beliefs, I think, unless you know, we haven't caught the guy, and so we could learn a whole lot more about him, about his motivations, about whether he had been in contact with ISIS.
But was he targeting these people because it was a Christmas?
It appears so. Again, all they know is that he
went in. You know what I'm saying? As if these are Christians celebrating a blasphemous day, I'm going to take them out.
Right. Strasbourg is a well-known market. In fact, I was reading here that they call themselves the center of Christmas. It's a big holiday for that part of the world, for that part of France and Germany. They all kind of congregate at the market down there. So it was a rich, target-rich environment. And yes, you're going to get Christians at a Christmas event. And so yes, it's likely that he was targeting them because of their faith.
Okay, next story.
All right. Prime Minister May, Theresa May in England, is looking at a no-confidence vote tonight. And most everything I'm reading says that she will survive the no-confidence vote, but now she is dropping her pledge to fight to stay as the head of the party through the next scheduled vote after this confidence vote. Should she win the confidence vote, she'll still be the head of the Conservative Party. It's all over Brexit, or the Britain's attempt to leave the European Union.
I thought they already voted on that.
Well, they did, but the divorce has to go through a whole lot of legal stuff. You know, who has to pay alimony and child support,
right?
Basically.
That's actually a good way of putting it.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
That's what all the negotiations have been between the EU and Britain.
Right.
I mean, the promises were made when you sign up. You get all the stuff interlinked.
Immigration and trade and all of these things have to be renegotiated.
So Great Britain left the European Union.
They are in the process of leaving.
In the process of leaving based on a vote of their citizens, a national referendum.
It was.
And it shocked a lot of people. And so that means that they will... when you have to leave something you've been a part of so long, like the European Union, there's a lot of stuff to work through. So it takes a couple of years. Do you know what the essence of her either confidence or no confidence? They have a parliamentarian system in Great Britain, like they do in Canada, for example, and Israel. So you don't stay in for 4 years like we do here in the U.S. So.
Well, they split the baby.
What's that?
That's a breaking news here. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is looking at the Fox News thing. Michael Cohen has been sentenced to 3 years in prison and loses $500,000 and has to pay $1.4 million in restitution and a $50,000 fine.
That's U.S. District Court in New York City?
Yes, it is.
What was that about? Do you know that?
Michael Cohen was part
of
the Mueller probe.
Trump's former attorney.
He was the former fixer. For Trump, and he was the attorney. Now, he was the one that started off not cooperating, but then kind of came around in the middle of the probe.
Justice FBI or somebody raided his law offices and basically took everything in there, which was a lot of people thought that was jolting to the legal process in America because you have. You have attorney-client privilege, and here it is, the U.S. government going in, raiding a law office, and basically ending this guy's career as a lawyer.
He pled guilty to campaign finance violations, tax evasion, and lying to Congress about Trump's past business dealings in Russia.
Personal tax evasion, probably.
Yes.
So that's he got caught cheating on his taxes. Am I right? Or he confessed to it? Trump. He's not an accountant. He doesn't have.
Right.
He didn't handle President Trump's taxes.
He pleaded guilty.
Okay.
That's why this sentencing happened relatively quickly, because he pled guilty to these.
Right.
He's trying to get a lesser sentence. So
right.
He got 3 years and the other aspects.
Probably
of his
plea down even further.
But he's done as an attorney. I don't know. Maybe he can be a talking head on MSNBC or something.
Well, what was the other thing he said he confessed to? It sounded like to me he was trying to, talking about Michael Cohen here, he was trying to sell access to the president.
It could.
Is that what he was trying to do? Is that what he's accused
of? I'm not sure if that's the campaign finance violations.
No, the campaign finance violations, I think, are if they're the only ones, is paying off those two women.
Yeah, and there's a big debate over whether or not those that is a campaign right, finance.
Right,
that
violation.
Was what he pled guilty to. He said
yeah,
that. That was,
you know what?
He was implicated in the hush money payment. Now, whether that's one
but
of the
but is
charges,
that even a campaign filing? That's a questionable thing. Whether that even is a because I mean,
if you're a Democrat, it is.
But, well, this is a seedy world that President Trump ran in.
John Edwards paid hush. Remember back in 2000? He paid hush money.
Yeah, they all do.
But that was campaign finance money.
I know.
And he
wasn't convicted.
And he was not convicted.
No, and President Obama, he had to pay back, I think Abe said, I don't know, a couple million dollars in money because of violations of campaign. It's akin to it's a very minor offense most of the time. And it's kind of ambiguous, the law on what is and what isn't. And like you said, there's a lot of things there you don't even know are campaign violations.
Scads of laws.
Yeah.
And so like if somebody,
so he's admitting,
somebody takes you out to dinner and that's a campaign finance violation because you talk politics.
Yeah.
And so
the Democrats are going to come on today and the talking heads on CNN, they're going to act like this is, this is ISIS.
Right.
That Michael Cohen's a member of ISIS, basically. That's how they're going to present this whole thing when it really amounts to not very much. It must to do about very little. I will say this. Now
the tax evasion stuff, that's...
Well, he was sentenced, according to the New York Times, for his role in a hush money scandal that could, according to the Times...
It's not a scandal, in my opinion. Again...
Well, it's the Times.
I know, but let me just say this. And we're a Christian radio network. So we believe in biblical standards in terms of how we live our lives, right?
Right.
And we also know that we're all human and we make mistakes. Sometimes worse than mistakes are sins, right?
Right.
With respect to President Trump, he lived a playboy billionaire lifestyle for several decades, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he hung out with these people who were... they didn't have any character. In other words, what I'm saying to you is, and I support President Trump's agenda, and I think he's doing a really good job as president overall. Don't misunderstand me. And the choices were between him and Hillary Clinton. That wasn't a choice.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Okay, so don't misunderstand me. But I'm just saying, you sort of reap what you sow in your life. We all do. And I think President Trump made some bad decisions with choices of friends and lawyers in this case.
Yeah.
Mr. Cohen was not on the up and up, doesn't seem to me like, in a lot of respects, if you hear what so when you repeatedly hire people and then fire people, and then you're the one criticizing the people you're firing, at some point you have to say, well, you're the one who hired them. At least
yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I would say to President Trump, you're going to go after Cohen. How long did you hire him?
Right.
Did you not know him any better than this?
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Here, so if I were Mr. Trump, I would probably just, of course, he's not going to. President Trump, I would probably just leave this one alone.
Yeah.
But he's not going to be able to probably help himself tweeting on this today. But and I do think it was, from what I know, unfair to raid. A lawyer's offices because don't you have confidentiality between attorney and
FBI said was what we do in a case like that is we go through what we grab,
okay,
and the things that are not related to the case,
okay,
go back.
But you know,
or whatever,
on the other hand, what they're doing here, you can, you know what, I'll probably 90% of Americans, if you look at everything that they've done in their life, you can find something wrong,
right? Because you have that
to get them
laws,
on perjury.
Yeah, as many laws as we have.
Yeah,
everybody's
yeah.
broken something.
That's what I'm saying. And then what they're doing with this they throw this net out from Robert Mueller basically, and just try to grab people. Interesting, the same laws didn't apply to Hillary Clinton. That's what a lot of people are pointing out. Go ahead, Steve.
The president hasn't tweeted out on this yet. I'm at his Twitter feed right now. He does have a very interesting tweet out. I heard this morning on the way in on Fox. It was a Republican congresswoman who was making this point, and I didn't get her name because it was on the radio. But she said this as well. So President tweets this out, talking about his desire for funding for a wall. He's looking for $5 billion. He says, Democrats and President Obama gave Iran $150 billion. They had no problem with that. By the way, it was in cash.
Right.
And yet they won't
That's a very good
give
point.
Him $5 billion for a national security wall.
That's a very good
that
point.
That is a really good point.
You're giving $150 billion to your enemy. And you won't even protect your own border for five.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, the Democrats and some Republicans, but mostly the Democrats, are so bent on not giving President Trump any kind of victory that he can celebrate that they're willing to put our national security at risk by keeping an open borders, basically, attitude. They wouldn't say that explicitly, but that's in essence what they're for is open borders.
Well, and let me just say about this $150 billion that went to Iran. I just want to make it clear in case someone is saying, and as some who defended President Obama did do, they said, well, that was money that we owed to Iran following the 1979 revolution, the Islamic Revolution, which is not factually true. We did owe that money to the Shah of Iran and his government, but it was overthrown by Islamic revolutionaries. So the Obama administration did not have the right to give that money to these radical mullahs over in Iran.
I didn't know that. That's what they used as an excuse.
That's what they used.
That's 1978. That's a Ayatollah Khomeini.
I was just
Ted Koppel.
Yeah.
I was just on the phone with the revolutionary leaders in Iran. They tell me that the $150 billion will not be used. It'll be used. They talked to Planned Parenthood and got the model. It'll be used to keep the lights on in Tehran, but yeah. Not for bombs and missiles.
Yes.
Yeah, and for printing Death to America posters.
Right. But
that's right. So, sadly, this is a great tweet from the president.
It is.
$150 billion to a murderous regime that is responsible for countless acts of terrorism in the Middle East and abroad, who hates this country, and the Obama administration gave them $150 billion, and the Democrats won't build a wall
for
$5 billion in our country. What a disgrace.
What if we can get Iran to come and build a wall? They've got some cash.
You know, Ed, you've got a minute and a half here. You've said, we had our meeting this morning, you've made a point. I know you don't have time to go into it at length here, but you've made a point that probably the only way that we're going to get a surefire border wall to protect us on the southern border at places where it's reasonable, something probably tragic is going to have to happen.
Well, the Democrats are not going to cave on this issue.
Right.
They've got a plan to take over, to make the Democratic Party a permanent majority and to make the Republican Party a permanent minority, and that is by getting essentially socialists from Latin America to come to this country with an open border. There's no way they're going to be pressured into building a wall or solving this problem. The only thing that would cause Democratic intransigence on this to collapse is if some terrorist act took the lives of American people. And it was proven that these people came across that porous southern border. That is the only way Democrats will ever cave on this issue.
Well, God hope that does not
happen. No, I am not asking for it.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's the lengths to which the Democrats will go to keep that border open. Their hand would have to be forced
by
a catastrophe.
So a couple of buildings in Houston come down, for example.
That kind of catastrophe is the only way they'll let go of this.
Right. Then the American people would demand.
Right. I want to make it clear, that would be a catastrophe and horrifying,
right.
Which is why we want a wall.
Right.
Don't want that to happen.
To keep something like that from happening. Steve, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Ed, appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Our thanks to Brent Creeley for running the control board for us today. Hey, folks, thanks for joining us. Take care. See you tomorrow.